Think about your typical day for a second. Ask yourself, how much of your daily workflow involves actually being creative versus just fighting with your software tools?
Oh, you definitely know the feeling intimately.
Right. You have this brilliant idea, you know exactly what you want to achieve, but then you spend hours just wrestling with bizarre syntax errors.
For those endless dependency nightmares.
Exactly. Or just trying to get a completely unrelated piece of legacy code to compile before you can even start your real work. It just drains the life out of a project.
The mental energy spent on the actual mechanics of coding almost always eclipses the energy spent on problem solving. It's this universal friction that just stops momentum dead in its tracks.
And that friction is exactly our focus today. For this deep dive, we are pulling from a really fascinating presentation by Satoshi Terasaki from Atelier 8th.
Right. He's a freelance software engineer who collaborates heavily with university researchers.
Yeah. And our mission today is to explore his findings on how AI coding agents are fundamentally changing the way we build, port, and maintain software.
So, okay, let's unpack this, because there is a genuinely surprising fact right at the top of his presentation.
There really is.
Historically, Terasaki really struggled with compiled languages. He favored dynamic ones, specifically Julia. But if you look at his workflow today, 90% of the code he is responsible for is generated by AI.
90%.
I mean, that's wild.
When you hear a number like that, it forces you to completely rethink what a developer's day-to-day actually looks like. We are looking at the end of the traditional human bottleneck.
Yeah.
This isn't merely a story about a machine outputting lines of text. It's about fundamentally removing the limitations of what a single developer or a single researcher can physically and mentally achieve in a given day.
So let's look at that pre-AI reality to understand the contrast. Because Terasaki paints a very vivid and honestly a very relatable picture of what software development actually looks like in the trenches.
Oh, absolutely. We all like to imagine software engineering as, you know, clean architecture and perfectly planned agile sprints. But he lists some specific grievances that will make anyone who works with code wince.
The reality is much messier.
Totally. Imagine inheriting a research project. The source code isn't on a server. It's just sitting useless on some personal C drive. There is absolutely no version control.
Classic.
The documentation is either completely missing or hilariously outdated. You try to run the code, and it simply refuses to compile.
Right, and there are zero unit tests to tell you if you break something while trying to fix it.
Exactly. And when you finally force it to run, you immediately hit segmentation faults.
Yeah.
And to top it all off, the core mathematical variables are entirely hard-coded into logic.
Human nature is the root cause of every single one of those issues. We naturally want to blame the tools or the compilers, but humans are the bottleneck.
Yeah, for sure.
Humans are incredibly creative beings, but we also get tired. We get bored by repetitive documentation. And perhaps most impactfully, we get incredibly stubborn.
That fatigue factor really jumps out from his notes. Terasaki points out how commit messages in version control get incredibly messy when developers are exhausted.
Oh, you can always see it in the Git history.
Right. If you look at a Git history, you can always tell when someone has been debugging a continuous integration and deployment pipeline for 4 hours straight.
The slow descent into madness.
Yes. The commit messages devolve from professional descriptions, like updated rendering logic to just fix, then fix again, then please work, and finally, just literal keyboard smashes.
When humans are forced to do repetitive, frustrating tasks, the quality of their work just drops drastically. But the stubbornness aspect is equally damaging.
How so?
Well, humans cling to familiar tools, even when those tools are no longer the best fit for the modern world. The source material mentions a specific environment rigidly requiring Fortran 77.
Wow, 1977.
Exactly. Fortran obviously has a legendary legacy in computing, but mandating a language standard from 1977 creates an environment that completely blocks modern development practices.
Because you can't use the new stuff.
Right. You cannot easily pull in modern package managers or build modular, shareable designs. You are trapped in a siloed ecosystem simply because of institutional resistance to change.
Which begs the question, why should you, the listener, care about any of this?
Yeah.
Especially if your primary job title isn't software engineer.
That's a great question.
Terasaki brings it back to fields like computational physics and academic research. In those environments, the end goal of your code isn't just to calculate a final number. The primary goal is reproducibility.
It has to be reproducible.
If your code is a messy, undocumented tangle of hard-coded variables that only runs on your specific laptop, A third party cannot reproduce your research results. And without reproducibility, the scientific value of your entire project essentially plummets to zero.
Bad code invalidates your findings. It is that simple. That is the human bottleneck we've been trapped in for decades. We sacrifice the science because we can't manage the syntax.
Here's where it gets really interesting, because Terasaki decided to bypass these human limitations entirely using AI. Let's look at his actual projects, starting with the Sparse IR saga.
That one is fascinating.
Yeah, this was a complex collaboration with researchers Shanna and Mori, and it sounds like an absolute logistical nightmare at the start.
The Sparse IR project is a masterclass in why AI porting is revolutionary. Version 1 of this software was deeply fragmented. They had independent implementations of their logic running simultaneously in Python, in Julia, and in Fortran.
That sounds impossible to maintain.
It is. Trying to keep three separate handwritten code bases synchronized with the latest mathematical updates is a massive, ongoing drain on human resources. They desperately needed a unified core system.
So the first step makes sense. They use AI to take their Julia code, a package called sparse.jl, and port it over to C++ IR.
The idea was to create a unified implementation called libsparse that the other languages could just call into.
But they quickly hit a wall. C++ is notoriously complex, and it proved too difficult for their specific team to rapidly iterate on and update.
It's a steep learning curve.
So rather than spending months mastering C++A, they simply used AI again to jump ship from C++ straight to Rust for version 2.
Moving to Rust was a strategic architectural decision. Rust offers a remarkably robust built-in package manager, which instantly solved the problem of pulling in external libraries and distributing their own work.
Right.
Beyond that, Rust makes it incredibly easy to expose a C API. This means they could write the core logic securely in Rust, and then easily allow Python or Julia to interface with it.
So the AI is basically just acting as this ultimate frictionless translator.
Exactly. It allowed the team to fluidly move their entire architecture to the optimal language for their needs without having to pay the massive learning costs of manually mastering the nuances of C++ and then starting all over again in Rust.
That concept of skipping the learning cost is wild. And Terasaki's porting triumphs just scale up from there. These are massive undertakings that would normally require a dedicated team of specialized engineers.
Well, without a doubt.
Take the Tensor for All project. He worked with Shinaya to port highly complex tensor network libraries, which are based on something called tensor cross interpolation, straight into Rust.
And that included pulling over a hefty Julia package called strided.jl.
Right. But I want to zero in on the many variable variational Monte Carlo project with Masala. How do you even begin to port a massive monolithic C implementation using AI?
You don't just ask the AI to translate it line by line, because monolithic C code is usually a tangled web where everything depends on everything else.
So what's the strategy?
The AI analyzed the overarching logic and helped them split this massive code base into beautifully neat, separate modular packages. They organized the random number generation into an SFMT package, the standard interfaces into a STIFACE package, and separated the optimizers.
They used the AI to enforce modern software structure on decades-old logic.
And the performance results are the crazy part. They took this newly organized Julia code and applied a specific Julia package called loopvectorization.jl.
Let me guess, it was fast.
By doing that, they optimized the new dynamic code to achieve single-thread execution speeds that actually beat the original compiled C code.
That is insane. They translated it, completely reorganized the architecture, and made it faster.
It proves that AI doesn't just blindly replicate legacy code. When guided correctly, it fundamentally restructures and optimizes. But to truly grasp the sheer flexibility of these agents, Terasaki's personal passion projects are even more revealing.
The Subset Julia VM project blew my mind. So Julia relies heavily on just-in-time, or JIT, compilation to run quickly, but Apple's iOS devices, like iPhones and iPads, strictly block JIT compilation at the operating system level for security reasons.
Right, which means you normally cannot run Julia natively on an iPad.
So why would he go through the trouble of building a custom virtual machine just for that?
Because the AI removed the friction of doing so. Terasaki used his AI agent to help him write a specialized Julia language runtime environment entirely in Rust.
On his own?
Yes. He essentially built a bridge to bypass Apple's security limitations, allowing Julia to run on iOS devices. The fact that a single freelancer can whip up a custom virtual machine in a secondary language as a side project is astonishing.
He also revived the philosophy of an abandoned Julia package called CXX.JL. He made it possible to call Rust code directly from Julia just by adding a simple macro attribute to the code.
He bridged a dynamic language and a static language with barely any boilerplate.
Oh, and he also casually built a TypeScript extension for VS Code so he could view Pluto notebooks, which usually require opening a separate web browser directly inside AI-powered code editors like Cursor.
Just another weekend project.
Right. So what does this all mean? We're talking about a single freelancer churning out massive library ports across multiple languages, building custom virtual machines, and writing complex extensions in TypeScript, a language that wasn't even his main focus.
It is a lot to take in.
I know what you were thinking as you listened to this. Are software engineers and researchers about to be entirely replaced by these AI agents?
This raises an important question, and it captures the primary anxiety of the current tech era.
For sure.
But based on Terasaki's deep experience, the answer is a definitive no. Terasaki is incredibly clear about where AI completely falls flat. First and foremost, AI lacks cutting-edge domain knowledge.
It doesn't know the science.
Exactly. Large language models have a broad, generalized understanding of the world, but they do not know the bleeding-edge theoretical physics required for your specific research. Furthermore, AI agents are notorious for cutting corners.
Yeah, the presentation makes it clear that if you aren't actively supervising, the AI will just write placeholder text and confidently tell you the feature is complete.
It will lie to your face.
It totally will. Or if you ask for a robust, generalized algorithm, the AI will take the lazy route and write a script that only solves for a very specific, narrow test case.
The AI also routinely ignores the established best practices of specific programming languages. For instance, in Julia, a core strength of the language is something called multiple dispatch,
which is the ability to dynamically choose which function to run based on the types of all its arguments.
Right. And the AI often fails to utilize this, resulting in clunky, non-idiomatic code. In Rust, the AI frequently struggles with the strict memory safety rules known as the borrow checker.
So how does it fix that?
To get around compiler errors quickly, the AI will just overuse the clone command, duplicating data in memory over and over. This technically makes the code compile, but it drastically bloats and degrades the performance of the software. You cannot blindly trust the output.
So your role isn't disappearing, it is shifting dramatically. You are being freed from the drudgery of memorizing syntax rules and chasing missing semicolons.
The busy work is gone.
Yeah. You no longer have to pay that steep learning cost of picking up a new language from scratch. Instead, you have to level up to become an architect. You need to focus on the big picture system design.
And on the micro scale, you have to focus on optimizing at the absolute lowest levels, the millisecond, microsecond, and nanosecond bottlenecks.
Because AI really struggles with deep visual profiler investigations. And, perhaps most crucially, you must gain deep domain knowledge. If you are building physics software, you need enough actual physics knowledge to converse meaningfully with the scientists. The AI can't do that networking for you.
You transition from being a bricklayer to an urban planner, because these tools remove the physical friction of typing out code. The velocity of your decision-making skyrockets.
The pace just changes entirely.
The source material shares a highly memorable anecdote about this exact phenomenon. Because the AI speeds up the workflow so dramatically, researchers actually find themselves getting much busier. Things they previously thought would take months are suddenly possible in an afternoon, so their ambitions scale up instantly.
They want to do more.
Right. One researcher actually subscribed to the Claude CodeMax $200 a month plan and used the AI so intensely, generating so much complex logic and architectural decisions in such a short window that the sheer cognitive load caused literal dizziness.
Imagine generating so much output that you give yourself vertigo.
It's intense.
Terasaki actually had to recommend that this researcher downgraded to the $100 a month plan just to force a slower pace and allow them to take a breath.
It illustrates the new paradigm perfectly. The bottleneck is no longer how fast you can type, but how fast you can think.
If you are curious about setting up a workflow that might give you vertigo, Terasaki runs down the current landscape of tooling you should consider.
The tooling ecosystem is evolving rapidly, but his core stack is highly practical. He uses Cursor Pro as his primary daily editor because its integrated AI models are incredibly responsive.
And for the engines themselves.
For the heavy lifting AI engines, He points to Claude Code utilizing the Opus 4.6 model and Codex utilizing GPT 5.3, depending on the complexity of the task. If you are looking for a robust, free option to dip your toes in, he recommends Google's anti-gravity model.
He drops some great practical advice for integrating all this, too. To make this workflow seamless, you need modern command line interface tools. He specifically highlights the GH command line tool for instantly managing GitHub issues without leaving your terminal, and NPM for installing various agent tools.
Essential utilities.
But my absolute favorite piece of advice is purely hardware. Invest in an ultra-wide monitor. When you have your file explorer, your actual code base, a terminal window, and an AI chat window all open simultaneously, screen real estate becomes your absolute most valuable asset.
It is boots-on-the-ground advice for the modern developer. But to truly understand the sheer analytical power of this new workflow, we need to break down the concrete demonstration Terasaki provided in his presentation.
The math magic demo. This is where the entire concept crystallizes. Terasaki sets up a specific computational problem, calculating the value of pi using the greatest common divisor, or GCD.
There is a wild, almost magical connection in number theory that makes this possible. If you pick two completely random positive integers, there is a specific probability that they are coprime.
Coprime simply means they share no prime factors. Their greatest common divisor is exactly one.
It turns out this probability is directly tied to the reciprocal of the Riemann zeta function evaluated at 2.
And how does that get us to pi?
Through Euler's product formula, we know the value of that specific zeta function is pi squared divided by 6. So the probability of our two random numbers being coprime is exactly 6 over pi squared.
That is so elegant.
It is. This means we can literally calculate an approximation of pi just by generating thousands of random pairs of numbers and checking their divisors computationally.
So Terasaki turns this mathematical quirk into a coding race. He starts by writing a JavaScript implementation to find the GCD using the classic Euclidean algorithm. He runs it for 10,000 pairs of numbers, and it successfully approximates pi to 3.1415.
A solid baseline.
But then he turns to his AI agent inside the cursor editor. He highlights his JavaScript code and simply prompts, "Port this to Julia." The AI translates the logic instantly. He runs the new Julia version, and it finishes the calculation in 1.8 seconds. It is already faster than his original JavaScript.
He immediately takes it a step further. He asks the AI to port that same JavaScript logic over to Rust. He compiles the Rust version, runs it, and it clocks in at 1.75 seconds, slightly faster than the Julia version.
Which you would expect.
Right. Effortlessly translating a mathematical algorithm across three entirely different language paradigms and proving the speed of compiled Rust is impressive on its own. But the twist in this demonstration changes everything.
Julia actually has a built-in greatest common divisor function right inside its standard library. So Terasaki swaps out his custom AI-translated Euclidean algorithm for Julia's native built-in function.
And the results.
He runs the code again, and the execution time drops to 1.45 seconds. Julia's standard dynamic library completely beat the raw compiled Rust code. How is a dynamic language outperforming compiled Rust?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, this exact moment is where AI elevates a developer from a simple coder to an investigator. Terasaki didn't just shrug and accept that Julia was somehow faster. He wanted to know the mechanics behind it.
So he dug in.
Yes. He instructed his AI agent to clone the entire official Julia repository from GitHub. He then told the AI to dig into the underlying source code of Julia's standard library, analyze it, and explain exactly how its native GCD function was structured.
The AI parses through the massive standard library code base and reports back a crucial detail. Julia isn't using the Euclidean algorithm at all. Under the hood, it is using something called Stein's algorithm, which is also known as the binary GCD.
Armed with this architectural insight, Terasaki gives the AI a new directive. Take Stein's algorithm from the Julia source code, translate that specific logic over to Rust, and replace my previous Rust implementation.
He's making the AI do the heavy lifting of the port.
Exactly. The AI executes the port, he compiles and runs this newly optimized Rust code, and the execution time plummets to an incredible 1.25 seconds. But he still isn't satisfied.
He pushes the investigation to the absolute hardware limit. Terasaki uses a very specific macro in Julia called @code_native. This macro allows you to see the raw underlying machine code, the actual instructions that the computer's processor executes.
It's as low level as it gets.
He has the AI output the raw machine code for both the Julia implementation and the compiled Rust implementation. He then asked the AI to compare these two blocks of processor-level instructions side by side.
Incredible.
The AI analyzes the raw machine code, identifies the exact processor bottlenecks in both sets of instructions, and suggests further optimizations to make both languages run even faster.
Consider the alternative human workflow for that sequence of events. First, you have to clone a massive, unfamiliar standard library. Then you have to manually hunt down a specific mathematical algorithm buried within it.
Just finding it takes forever.
Right. You have to intellectually understand that algorithm, port it to a completely different language paradigm, and then perform a side-by-side comparative analysis of raw machine code to shave off fractions of a second. That would take a senior human developer weeks of dedicated, exhausting effort.
And the AI handled the translation, the code base investigation, and the machine level optimization in a matter of minutes.
It fundamentally changes what one person can accomplish. And it brings us perfectly back to you, the listener.
Yeah, if you are sitting there wondering how this paradigm shift impacts your own career or your own passion projects, the key takeaway from Terasaki's deep dive is incredibly optimistic.
It really is.
AI coding agents are not here to steal your job. They are here to handle the repetitive, mind-numbing drudgery that makes you want to abandon a project. They are here to pay the frustrating learning cost of adopting new technologies and frameworks.
They are here to elevate you.
Yes, you get to step back from placing the individual bricks, and you get to become the architectural thinker.
You are trading syntax for strategy. You are trading frustrating compiler errors for deep domain expertise. It is a massive upgrade in what you are capable of building, provided you are willing to embrace the role of directing these tools rather than competing with them.
I want to leave you with a profound thought from Terasaki's presentation that really anchors this entire deep dive. He noted, jobs disappear only when a certain kind of passion disappears. As long as you maintain the passion to build, to research, and to create something new, these AI tools just give you a vastly bigger lever to move the world.
As we wrap up, I want to offer one final thought for you to mull over. We have explored how AI can flawlessly translate complex concepts between dynamic languages like Julia, static languages like Rust, and even optimize raw machine code down to the processor level.
Yeah.
If AI can bridge these gaps so effortlessly, perfectly speaking, any syntax we throw at it, will the very concept of programming languages eventually become obsolete for humans? In 10 years, will you be learning Python or Rust, or will you just be designing software purely through natural language logic, leaving the AI to decide how the machine actually reads it?
Something to ponder the next time you're staring down a stubborn syntax error. Keep learning, keep building, and we will catch you on the next deep dive.
Mm.